This episode of One Hit Thunder is brought to you by DistroKid.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You may remember this week's song as the theme song to a 90s teen drama, but buckle up because you're about to learn about the long and prolific career of Bodines before they broke into the mainstream with Closer to Free. Believe it or not, this influential jangle pop staple were a favorite of fans and critics alike for well over a decade before their big break. Thanks to our Patreon supporters, this week we dive into the long and occasionally dark history of this iconic band, tracing the roots back to the vibrant Milwaukee music scene.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
So Matt, Party of Five seems like a show you would have or do watch, am I right?
I've never seen a second of Party of Five, but I get why you would think that because I've watched all of Dawson's Creek. I'm watching The OC for a podcast. I love Gilmore Girls. Party of Five just kind of missed me, which is, again, crazy because it's Neve Campbell and Jennifer Love Hewitt, who you think at that time I would have just been watching the show to look at those two actresses for
not to
an
mention,
hour.
Not to mention Matthew Fox, who is Jack from Lost, Lacey Chabert, the queen of Hallmark Christmas movies. Did you know that she is called that?
I have heard people say that. I didn't know that that was like an official nickname that she currently carries. But yeah, she's in like 2 to 3 Hallmark Christmas movies every year or something like that. It's crazy.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know who we're talking about, she's in Mean Girls. She's Gretchen Wieners from Mean Girls.
She's trying to make Fletch a thing.
Yes, yeah, trying to make Fetch a thing. Fetch. Yeah. Jeremy London was on that show from Mallrats.
Yeah.
Adam Scott, Carol O'Connor, Brittany Murphy was apparently on it. Dan Lauria. Do you know who Dan Lauria is?
I know that name, and I'm trying to think of why I know that name. So just tell me.
He's the dad from Wonder Years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like the grumpy dad. Breckin Meyer was apparently on this show. I'm like,
why didn't I watch this show? I feel like there's a Party of Five Pluto channel. I'm willing to bet there might be.
Okay.
It seems like the type of show that would get one. But all right.
Well, the reason we bring this up is because the song we are talking about today is Closer to Free by the Bodines, which is the theme song for the show, so I really thought we were in store for another Rembrandt-style show. It is a late 90s jangle pop band that is used as the theme song for a show who I never heard another song by.
Yeah, and I think similar to the Rembrandts episode, I went into this thinking, okay, this was probably a band that had maybe one album that just like a producer liked and like picked this song at random. But it's like, oh no, this band had been together for 12 years before the Party of Five thing came around.
Prolific band. They have a lot of albums. They are still together to a certain extent. We'll get to that. But
I think they released their 15th album like a year or two ago. Like they have not slowed down.
They have a new album. Yeah, they still play shows. But I want to go into some history of this band because it was pretty interesting that this is a pretty beloved band. Formed in Waukesha, Wisconsin, Kurt Newman and Sam Yannis met each other in high school in 1977, which I got to say, it's funny to think about, like, okay, we knew this song from the mid to late 90s. 1977 feels so long ago.
It was almost 20 years earlier than the song being a hit.
Yeah, that's like, true. That's true. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just wild to me that I wouldn't have thought. I would have thought this band started in the 90s or something. But not true. These two, Kurt and Sam, began to sing and play guitar under the name Da Bodines in 1980.
They should have never changed it. I think that was the big mistake. That's why it took so long for them to become famous.
Yeah, Da Bodines.
They dropped the
duh. In 1983, Da Bodines began playing around Milwaukee's East Side music scene with a hired drummer and bass player. And I want to make note, along the way, it's one of those bands like Dexy's Midnight Runners or something where everybody... Not everybody. A lot of people have played for this band. Kenny Aronoff, the famous studio drummer, has played for this band.
I mean, this is Kurt. Like, this band is Kurt.
Kurt and Sam for a long time.
It's Kurt and Sam, but even then... So here's the big thing that I noticed. I'm not sure if you caught this when you were doing the research, but it seems like from, like, the third or fourth album... Kurt was recording this was Kurt by himself recording everything.
Right.
But very early into the band, he started just kind of being almost like that Billy Corgan. You know what I mean? Like how Billy Corgan or Dave Grohl records most of the instruments for those albums. And then even though they don't have like a hired gun band, it is like the Foo Fighters is a lineup of guys. For many years, none of them were playing on those records.
Okay, I did see that about Kurt playing a lot, especially as they got further into their career. But I wanted to make note of it being Kurt and Sam, because the song we're talking about, Closer to Free, Kurt and Sam are both listed as the two songwriters of it.
Yeah.
So, noted on that.
I'm sure that they wrote songs together, but as far as when you're listening to a Bodines record, unless it's the first two records, you are almost definitely just listening to Kurt playing every single instrument, doing almost all the vocals.
Yeah. He was the only Kurt that mattered in the 90s.
He truly was.
Yeah.
Before we get too deep into their history, I do have to ask, early on in their Wikipedia, I read a sentence that I needed to address. They have their own permanent installation in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum in Cleveland, Ohio.
Dude, we're going to get to this as we go further through the history.
That's crazy to me, though.
This band is like considered Milwaukee's greatest band or most famous band ever. They had some serious buzz in the mid to late 80s. Like, music critics were raving about them. And
a Rolling Stones listener poll rated them the best new American band in like 1987.
Yeah. So this band, they were not just a TV theme song band. I'm surprised that I didn't know them beforehand. Granted, I was a little kid back then, but I would have thought that I would have heard of this band at some point. But I really hadn't before the Party of Five theme song.
It seems like, though, especially because Rolling Stone in 1987, I think, is different than what Rolling Stone is today, in the sense I think Rolling Stone was like a musician's, like how they refer to bands as like a musician's band. Like, you were reading Rolling Stone if you were really, really deeply into music. And I think that's what the takeaway is I got from the Bodines was like, mainstream wise, they had basically this and a couple minor hits, but if you were like a musician, this was like potentially your favorite band in the early 80s or late 80s, early 90s.
Well, what is Rolling Stone now? All I think it is now is posts that come up on Facebook that I click into to read and then I can't read because I'm not subscribed. And then once in a while, they let one slip through. I was real ashamed of myself when I clicked into one today. It was one of the ones they let you read where it was the timeline of the Taylor Swift, Kanye West, Kim Kardashian beef. I was like, why did I click this and why am I reading it? Why am I well, adding to this?
That's what I was going to say is I think Rolling Stone really became more of a pop culture as did most magazines. It became like a pop culture magazine that just happens to focus on what's happening in popular music. But like, I think the 70s and 80s Rolling Stone was actively also trying to break and expose new bands to a wider audience.
Well, dude, like, 90s Rolling Stone was so iconic. Think a couple things about it. One thing about it was Rolling Stone was like bigger than the other magazines. Like, I'm talking physical size.
It was a wide magazine.
Wide and tall. Like, it stood out. And the covers of Rolling Stone are some of the most iconic images of bands and sometimes actors and actresses or whatever of the 90s. Those Rolling Stone covers, you think about, like, okay, our Boy Genius just did a parody of the Nirvana, the famous Nirvana one. Like, they wore the same things that Nirvana had worn. But there's just so many of those Rolling Stone covers. So it was still part of the culture in the 90s, whereas now I just think the stuff pops up on a timeline and you click on it. I guess they're still a physical magazine, right?
They are still a physical magazine, but it honestly is the story that we've heard a million times, but it was basically just the internet comes around and like you can't really make it as a niche print magazine anymore. And then it's almost like you're a music magazine, but you're like sort of tabloidy a little bit.
you're sort of just making clickbait because you have to, unfortunately. Yeah, like, I mean, there's positives and negatives to it. I mean, the positives are you're probably saving a lot of trees from being cut down if you're primarily on the internet. But then I think the quality probably suffers to a certain extent. They would probably argue it doesn't, but I literally clicked into a thing that was about Kanye West and Taylor Swift beef today. So I would say that maybe the quality is suffering to a certain extent. But bringing it back around to the Bodines here a little bit. So the Bodines started becoming popular in Milwaukee. They added a drummer, Guy Hoffman, in 1984, one of many drummers that played for them. And to compensate for not having a bass player, Kurt modified his Fender with two additional pickups that would capture the low end frequencies, which I think is that what the dude from Local H did too?
I think I remember. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they started becoming popular around Milwaukee and they added a bassist, Bob Griffin, in 1985. And that's at that point when they signed that bassist, Warner was like, all right, now we're ready to sign you guys. In 1985, they signed to Warner and they changed their name to simply Bodines. They dropped the duh. No more duh Bodines. They were just Bodines. And they recorded their first album, Love and Hope and Sex and Dreams, with T-Bone Burnett. Matt, what album? I mean, he produced a lot of albums, but what important album did T-Bone Burnett produce?
I know that name. I saw it hyperlinked. I almost clicked into it. Dang. I'm going to say something, and I'm sure I'm wrong because I'm thinking of T-Boz, but did he have anything to do with TLC Crazy Sexy?
He did not. T-Bone and T-Boz never teamed up as far as I could see. He produced August and Everything After.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense.
Seven years later, he did. But
I'll say this, though. You telling me that information, and from the older Bodine songs I listened to, I don't think it's impossible that the Counting Crows actively were like, we need to find the guy who produced Love and Hope and Sex and Dreams by Bodines. Because it feels... I could see these guys being an early influence on the Counting Crows guy for that similar, like, 60s jangle pop, like, rootsy rock and roll type sound that early Counting Crows especially had in spades.
I'll buy that. Yeah. I think that's probably true because the band that Adam Duritz was in before Counting Crows from, like, 89 to 91 was also like this style of music. I could see the Bodines being an influence. They seem to be a big jangle pop influence. Like, I'm sure the Gin Blossoms like the Bodines and that makes sense. So this first major label album from Bodines was critically acclaimed, came out in 1986. And then their second album, Mike Campbell from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, was going to produce their second album, but he wanted to make their sound more like Tom Petty's sound. So instead, they went back to Wisconsin and accepted the producer offer from Jerry Harrison from the Talking Heads to produce their second album. And on that second album, they were given more freedom to experiment. Outside Looking In was released in October 1987, and it had more of a modern 80s rock sound. And the album's lead single, Only Love, peaked at number 16 on the U.S. mainstream rock charts.
Well,
and,
there's
pretty
two
good
other.
Song.
It's pretty a pretty good song. There's two other big things that happened off this second album, Chris.
Mm.
One of them. Well, actually, just only one thing off the second album, and then we'll dive into the third album. This album also led to them being the opener for U2 during the Joshua Tree tour.
Yeah, Bodine's weren't messing around, man.
No, that's pretty big.
That
but,
had
you know,
to be one of the biggest tours
of
that
87?
Year.
Oh, for sure. I can't imagine outside of like a Michael Jackson or a Madonna tour, that has to at least be the biggest rock and roll tour that was happening that year, because that Joshua Tree album was like massive, like undeniably massive. Yeah. But the thing that made me gasp out loud during my research was that 2 years later, 1989, they record their third album, and two of the songs off that third album made their way onto the soundtrack.
I know. Yep.
Of The Wizard.
The Wizard, baby. That's incredible. Yeah, it was the songs You Don't Get Much and Red River. Those were from the third album. Those were from the 1989
album. That's the third album,
album.
Yeah. So yeah. 2 years later, they got those songs. Man, can we just take a quick second to talk about how incredible The Wizard still is.
Like, California.
It's so good.
Dude, I mean, it's Fred Savage. We all love Fred Savage. It's Jenny Lewis, right?
Yeah, lead singer of Rilo Kiley.
Yeah, it's Jenny Lewis. And that was I feel like I've talked about this on podcasts a lot or something. I don't know
why. You first discovered that there was going to be a Super Mario 3 was Dude. Watching that movie. Yeah.
You were maybe too young. Or were you too young at that point to realize?
I was four. I was very late to The Wizard. I know The Wizard as like a bad movie podcast discussion fodder, but I know plenty of people who were alive at the time where it's like, when I was, you know, X amount years old, it was not a bad movie. It was just the coolest shit I'd ever seen.
Well, like, when that screen opens at the end of the movie, you know, the climax of the movie, and it's Super Mario Brothers 3, and you have never seen this yet.
Yeah.
I can't even describe the feeling of that. You know how exciting it was when Super Mario Brothers 2 came out? That was, oh my God, I'll never forget where it was Nolan Bergamasco's birthday party. got there and people were playing Super Mario Brothers 2. Or no, was it Vince Wynn's? It was actually Vince Wynn's birthday party, but I was playing it with Nolan. That's right. And I just couldn't believe my eyes. And then I couldn't believe when I saw Super Mario Brothers 3. I couldn't believe when I saw Sonic the Hedgehog on a big screen TV for the first time. It's Sean Roland's birthday party. Oh boy. These memories, you know, but Wizard. Wizard was very, very formative at that time. Yeah.
As it should have been. But yeah, that's amazing. I love that so much. That I literally yelled out loud in my house.
So back to the Bodines here. In 1991, they began recording with David Z, who was the producer for Prince at Paisley Park Studios. Like, this band, I got to respect the fact that they like worked with T-Bone, and then they want to work with Jerry Harrison. Now they're working at Prince's studio. Like, they're not messing around. They're not staying necessarily in one lane. But I will say that as I was learning about the Bodines last night, and I'm listening to the albums, it always sounds like the Bodines. It doesn't sound like a dramatic thing. It's a lot of mid-tempo songs. Nothing really ever grabs me too much. I did like that Only Love song that was a single. I thought that even that song, I'm like, this is pretty good. But like, nothing where I was like, oh my God, I gotta get more into the Bodines.
Yeah, I mean we're getting pretty close to talking about the single. Mm-hmm. And like, that is, as much as I think the Bodines had some good songs, I don't think they had anything that is as much ear candy.
No.
As this like 2 minute and 40 something second Closer to Free song that is just like from that opening, to just that repetitive, even though it's not as repetitive as you think it is, like the lyrics kind of change each verse, but it's just like that, that every piece of this song, I'm like, holy shit, the song is so good.
I mean, it fits perfectly into like, okay, Rembrandts, their theme song, it fits perfectly with that. It reminds, it puts me in the mind of something like REM Stand or something where it's just over the top, almost bubblegum jangle pop. And it's pretty undeniable. It's pretty good.
So we talk about Party of Five, right? Like for me, the big thing I remember it from is the opening credits to Heavyweights.
Oh, wow.
It's literally the first scene of Heavyweights, and it's the sound of school being let out for the summer. And that to me is exactly what this song felt like as a 10-year-old in 1995.
That would be a good first song when that final school bell rings. Closer to Free, baby. Or maybe like 4 minutes before it rings.
It's literally the scene in the movie is, for those of you who haven't seen Heavyweights, it's a close-up of the clock, and the clock just hits the time, and the you know, bell rings, letting everyone know school's out, and right when it happens, it's that, like, and then it's just all these kids bursting out of the classrooms, running out of the school, and I'm like, yep, that is the vibe that this song has always given me, is just
like
getting the fuck out of my, I love Heavyweights. Love Heavyweights. Have you ever seen Heavyweights?
Of course I've seen Heavyweights. I didn't know was one of those cringeworthy movies, like when you watch it now, it's like, I don't know about this.
I think it holds up for a couple reasons, right? Like, it's early Judd Apatow. It's one of his first scripts.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's starring Paul Feig, who co-created Freaks and Geeks with him.
Really?
Yeah, he plays the counselor at the fat camp who lost all the weight and is super skinny, and they always make fun of him for losing so much weight at the fat camp. You've got, not that he's a great dude, but you got Adam Sandler's like buddy Alan Covert is all in there from Grandma's Boy.
Why, not a great dude? I don't know anything about this.
Let's just say he politically does not align with you and I.
Oh, no. No, Alan. No, Grandma's Boy. You can't do this to me.
A young teen, Kenan Thompson, fresh off of all that. You've got Jerry Stiller and Ben Stiller in that movie. Like, it's got a pretty stacked cast. It is I think it is very funny, and I think that the important thing is, like, it always it doesn't lean into the fat jokes as much as I think someone else would make. It's very empathetic to the kids at the fat camp, and we're kind of siding with them and wanting to see them overcome the bullies, where I think in the hands of someone that wasn't Judd Apatow and Paul Feig, it could have very easily flipped to the other thing, where we're almost supposed to be cheering for the sports camp taking these fat kids down a notch.
Wow, who's making that movie?
You ever see an 80s movie?
Okay, all right. You know what other movie this song is in?
Milk Money?
Milk Money. You ever see Milk Money?
I saw Milk Money exactly once in my life, and it was not unlike the kids in the movie Milk Money. Someone had rented the movie Milk Money, and we as young kids got together to watch it, only to discover that there was not, in fact, nudity in the movie Milk Money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's not, but definitely like a weird premise where...
What a premise.
It's Melanie Griffith and Ed Harris are the stars of this movie. Malcolm McDowell is also in this movie as like a bad guy, but it's a group of young boys put their money together to hire a prostitute to teach them about sex. But then the prostitute comes back home with the one kid, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, he explains it to his dad that she's a tutor, that she's his tutor or something. Yep. And he doesn't realize that she's a prostitute, and I think he falls in love with her, and I don't know. It's a strange, strange movie.
It's a strange movie, and I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and RIP, obviously, but Anne Heche also plays the other prostitute that Melanie Griffith is friends with in that movie. Okay.
So, but yeah, Closer to Free was also in this movie.
They were hoping that with their milk money, they could get Melanie Griffin to get her boobs closer to free.
Because that was
the main thing. They just wanted to see a naked woman. They were like, let's pull together our milk money and we'll do this. And then from the very quick look at the Wikipedia plot page that I just saw, it's that they decide not to do it at the last second, but find that someone has stolen their bicycles. And then Melanie Griffin is like, Melanie Griffith is like, I will drive you guys home. I will take you home.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. The synopsis is, in Milk Money, a group of young boys pool their money to hire a prostitute to teach them about sex. But things get complicated when one of them develops feelings for her. As the boys navigate friendship, curiosity, and the complexities of adult relationships, their unconventional arrangement leads to unexpected discoveries about love and acceptance.
Well, going back to the Bodines as a television series theme song band, apparently I have no recollection of this, but according to Wikipedia, in 1999, Party of Five had a spin-off series called Time of Your Life, in which the Bodines also performed the theme song, which was a cover of the Beatles' I've Just Seen a Face.
In 1999, there's a show called Time of Your Life. There's a song that they probably could have used, although it might have been too expensive. Hey there, One Hit Thunder listeners. Are you ready to take your music to the next level? Well, get ready to rock, because this episode is brought to you by DistroKid, the ultimate digital music distribution service for artists like you. With DistroKid, you can easily upload your songs or albums to online stores and streaming platforms like Spotify, Apple Music, and YouTube Music, reaching fans all around the globe. But that's just the beginning. DistroKid offers a ton of awesome features like Hyperfollow, which helps you promote your releases and get pre-saves on your songs all for free. But wait, there's more. The DistroKid app is now available on iOS and Android. With the app, you can manage your releases, track your streaming stats, and even withdraw your earnings, all from the palm of your hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. This powerful tool allows you to put the finishing touches on your tracks in minutes, ensuring they sound polished and professional every time. But that's not all. DistroKid has just launched a brand new feature called Instant Share, allowing you to easily share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more. With Instant Share, you can keep your music streaming at the highest quality while making the best impression possible. So what are you waiting for? Elevate your music career today with DistroKid and unlock a world of possibilities. Possibilities that I know all about because I've been using DistroKid for years. It's seriously great. If you haven't used it before, you're going to love it. And One Hit Thunder listeners get an exclusive offer, 30% off your first year with DistroKid by signing up at distrokid.com/VIP/OneHitThunder. That's distrokid.com/VIP/OneHitThunder.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
In the darkest corners of the internet, a nameless, formless entity has been growing. No one dares question where it was created or what it wants, but those who have been entranced by its musings chant its blood-curdling name in unison. Horror Movie Night!
Find Horror Movie Night on your favorite podcasting app or at hmnpodcast.com.
Closer to Free, we got to mention, it was from the album Go Slow Down, from their 1993 album Go Slow Down. Once again, produced by T-Bone Burnett. Dude's a hitmaker.
And the thing that we kind of skipped over was that with their fourth album, the album before this one, they went in an insanely different direction. Tons of like synthesizers and drum machines.
That's the one they did at Prince's studio.
Yeah, they did that one in Prince's studio, and it wasn't well received. And the quote that I read was that the band decided they were going to stop chasing having a hit and were just going to try to make songs that they themselves would want to listen to. But and it was under that that they created their biggest hit.
But I do want to note,
a good note.
I do want to note on that album they recorded at Paisley Park, which is called Black and White. The album's first track, Good Things, is one of Bodine's most popular songs, and it was never released as a single. It's just like a fan favorite, and it's a pretty good song.
But I think that there's something to be said there about the idea of, like, you know what? We're not going to try to write a hit. We're just going to try to write the songs that we want to hear, and then when you're not, it's almost like when you're not trying to chase that song, the song finds you. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. If you are, I don't know what the percentages are, but I would guess the percentages of people trying to write a hit song versus people just writing what's in their heart or what they love, that those songs where you're writing what you feel are much more likely to become a hit than something that's just like manufactured to be a hit, right?
I would have to think
that the people can subconsciously see through when something is just not authentic.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about when this song peaked for a quick second. I'm not sure if you tracked down the billboards, but I certainly did. And the song peaked at 16 on the Hot 100 on May 4th. We've got another stellar top five.
Of what year?
Oh, sorry, of 1996. Here's the top five of
It wasn't until 1996. So this album came out in 1993. But then Party of Five, I thought, started in 1994.
It did start in 1994. It took a long ass time for this to break in the Hot 100. Because you have to imagine that maybe the first season of Party 5 was like not the explosion that it was. Similar to Friends, I feel like the Rembrandt's theme song to Friends took until the second or third season to really blow up, because we gave shows more time to like find their footing. But listen to this top five real quick. Number five. Coolio's 1, 2, 3, 4, Something New.
Okay.
Great jam. Number three, we got Alanis Morissette, Ironic.
Okay.
Number three, we've covered it on the show already. The Tony
this
Rich.
This one's also number three?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, number four was Alanis. Number three is Tony Rich Project, Nobody Knows.
Okay.
Number two, Celine Dion, Because You Love Me, which I think is one of her best songs.
Okay.
And number one, potentially my favorite song by this artist, Mariah Carey, Always Be My Baby.
Yeah, that's a pretty good Mariah jam.
That's a pretty good Mariah jam. A few of the other noteworthy songs I pulled from the top 20 that particular week. At number 19, our fan favorite, Jan Arden, with Insensitive.
Okay.
Number 14, Tracy Chapman, Give Me One Reason.
Okay, whatever.
Number 13, Everything But the Girl, Missing.
All right.
And then we got two rap songs I want to mention. Number 12, LL Cool J's Doing It.
Oh, that's all right.
Doing it. Wow. And then number nine, I can't believe that this song, I want you to think about this for a second. This song reached it to number nine on the Billboard Hot 100, which meant that at some point in time, Casey Kasem had to introduce this song on the radio. Busta Rhymes, Woo-Ha, Got You All in Check.
Nice. Okay. That's higher than I would have thought that song would have been.
100%. I thought that was like a song that did well on like the rap charts but didn't cross over. To be in the top 10 is pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's LL Cool J and the Coolio song, I can at least like kind of hear the pop sensibility that's there where it wouldn't feel out of place on top 40 radio. I can't imagine that song on top 40 radio with the weird beat, with the like, yah, 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 like in the background. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you, Busta.
Nice. Okay, Matt. So it is necessary to note, like you said earlier, on this album that Closer to Free is on, which is called Go Slow Down, produced by T-Bone Burnett, it was a more acoustic, like, filled album, and it did mark their transition into 90s alternative rock. And, like you said, Kurt did play, like, most of the stuff on the album.
Yeah.
And that is important to note, because as we move through this story, because by 2003, the band terminated their former management because they got into a battle with this Mark McCraw guy, who was kind of the guy who managed them from the very start, who like gave them money to record and stuff. So I don't know what went wrong there, but their seventh album Resolution came out in 2004. And then they released their eighth album in 2008 called Still. Their ninth album, Mr. Sad Clown, was released in 2010. And then their 10th album, Indigo Dreams, came out in 2011. Prolific band. I got to, you know, we're not going to be able to say the thing we said about BB Mac with this band. Like, they've been doing it way before the song caught on. They're still doing it way after the song came on. They are lifers. Well, Kurt is anyway.
Let me ask you a question real quick. So you're Kurt. You are the Bodines, right?
Mm-hmm.
The year is now 2024.
Yeah.
You're playing a show. Are you starting the show with Closer to Free because it's such a high energy song and you can maybe like get the people who only know you for that one song out so you can play with the faithful fans? Or is it your closer so that you have everybody there for the entirety of the show?
No, it's the next. It's got to be the next to last song.
So okay.
They play Closer to Free, and then I think they close with that Good Things song, which, because that one was never a single. It is just popular based purely on the fact that their fans love it, you know?
Okay.
So that, I don't know. I'm just guessing, but that's what I think. I don't think they open with Closer to Free. I think they make them wait for it.
I think that that's probably the correct case, but I also think, man, if I was in a 90s cover band, let's say now I'm not the Bodines, just in a 90s cover band, I'd be hard pressed to think of a better song to kick off the set in the way that you want a set to kick off, quite like this song. This is a great start to a show.
It, you know what this song feels like? It also feels, for some reason, really Pete and Pete.
I could see that. I'm willing to bet that the that the co-creators of Pete and Pete probably were Bodines fans, just based on like the different types of musical guests they would have. Like, you've already named them, like, you know, having Michael Stipe from REM show up in an episode and stuff like that. It feels like it would make sense that they would be big Bodine fans. Bodine folk.
Okay, let's get into it. In 2011, one of the two founding members of Bodine, Sam Yannis, left the band due to differences of opinion that had been going on for years, according to Kurt. And the band continued on without him. They made their 11th album, American Made, in 2012. Their 12th album came out in 2014. And then in June of 2018... This is pretty bad.
This is pretty bad. And let's, two things real quick before we get into this. Number one, we don't do this a ton. There might be a essay trigger warning we're throwing out there because we're about to talk about some really fucked up shit. Number two, I just want to call out how shitty the way he quit this band was that he just didn't show up to a show and then texted the band and crew that he was quitting the band. Really fucked up way to quit a band. But we're about to find out that that's probably the least fucked up thing.
Yeah, that's
that Sam did.
Right. So June of 2018, Kurt Newman's stepdaughter said in interviews that Sam Yannis, Kurt's other founding member of Bodines, had subjected her to repeated acts of sexual abuse from 2001 to 2007 while she was a minor. This started when she was 9 years old.
Yeah.
Charges were filed, but then I read there was like a bombshell report from the Milwaukee paper or the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can go read it online. I sent it to Matt last night, where it tells Tessa Newman's story about all this and why she couldn't, you know, or whatever, why she couldn't press charges and stuff. And I watched this YouTube of Sam, I think it was the Milwaukee News or something, saying, I didn't do that. You know, it's like, okay, go read the article.
Sam, in that article, Sam tries to act like this is over royalties of some, like, he deflects real hard on the question. Like, he essentially just says, like, I didn't do that, and shame on Tessa and Kurt for doing this just because we've had a disagreement about royalties or whatever. And it's like,
right.
No one would make an accusation about this over the royalties on, no offense, the Bodine spec catalog. Like,
It makes absolutely no sense. And even Tessa Newman had said in this interview, like, the reason she didn't, I mean, first of all, she was a kid. Second of all, she knew that it would ruin, I mean, she loved Kurt, you know, that was her stepfather, and she knew that it would ruin his life, the band would be done, all this stuff. So she didn't say anything about it. It's awful. It's really, if you read the article, I mean, there's a giant article about it. She said the reports, it was like 10 hours of recounting the incidents and stuff. This is not just some internet rumor made up to, like, ruin someone's image or whatever. It's pretty bad. And I'm not a jury in a courtroom, but all I'll say is if you're interested, the article's out there. And you know, it had to be the worst thing in the world. I mean, for her, first and foremost, I can't imagine how Kurt felt about all this. I mean, he didn't know what was going on, and, you know, it's awful. And obviously, I mean, it has to be especially hard too, because all these songs, back catalog songs they had written together, Kurt has to go perform those. But in what we've seen, Kurt was the mastermind behind the music.
I hate to say, like, a comfort, but, like, knowing sometimes information like that can taint a song and a band's back catalog. And I think just the sheer fact that Sam seemingly had less and less and less to do with the band's output over the years makes it at least feel like, all right, I can still listen to Closer Than Free and not feel bad about it quite differently than listening to, like, a Michael Jackson song or an R. Kelly song or something like that, where it's like, no, the person singing this song, the person who wrote this song, the person that crafted this song is undeniably a monster walking among us. It seems like Sam had less and less and less to do with the Bodines output pretty early on, I think. I think as early as the third or fourth album. You never want us to have to talk about this stuff on this podcast, because it's supposed to be like a fun, goofy podcast. Yeah.
I was shocked to see that and read about it. And like I said, I don't like to jump to judgment without, but if you go read the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I mean, it is a long piece about it, and it's not someone doing this to simply defame Sam Yannis, the guitarist of Bodines. Like, that's not the point here, you know? So, pretty bad. But, on the bright side, I believe that, you know, everything that's in the past for everyone, you know, everyone who was affected by it, and Bodines are still out there rocking. I thought it was a pretty interesting story. I do have a game for you, Matt, if you want me to lift your spirits a little bit here.
There's no good transition from that topic.
There's
to
no good transition, and there's nothing really great. There's no great insight that Matt and I can add to this horrible story.
Not at all. So let's play a game.
Let's play a game. That's what I say. So, Matt, you're not going to get multiple choices. The only thing I'm going to tell you is you're going to get questions. I'm going to read you a lyric, and you got to tell me what song that lyric is from. But here's your one clue. Every one of these songs has the word free in the title.
Okay. I was going to say, if this is just Bodine's songs, I'm already going to lose.
Name this Bodine's lyric. That'd be a terrible game. How many out of six do you think you can get?
Out of six, let's go with five.
Oh, okay. I like it. Lyric one. All the bad boys are standing in the shadows. and the good girls are home with broken hearts.
Oh, shit. The girls are home with broken hearts. Oh, my God. I know that lyric. All the bad boys are staying in the shadows. And free is in the title.
Yep. People at home are screaming at their podcast app right now.
I'm screaming in my brain right now because I know this song.
We referenced this artist at one point in this episode.
We referenced this song.
Don't be looking back at your notes.
No, I'm not looking at my notes. I'm trying to think of all the songs that we referenced because we talked about the Counting Crows. And I'm trying to think if there's a Counting Crows song with free that I'm blanking on. You know, and I'm sure the audience knows, but man, when you're on... Oh, wait. Okay. It's Tom Petty, Free Falling.
Oh, finally. Jeez, he got there finally. Like, really,
I could not find the melody to the lyric. I knew the lyrics immediately.
I don't know if you should get a full point for how long. Okay, you get a full point.
There's a lot of songs with the word free in its name.
Okay. All right. You got a point. Lyric two.
Okay.
If I leave here tomorrow, would you still remember me?
What? Leonard Skinner. Freebird, yeah. Leonard Skinner.
You got it. Okay. I didn't think you were going to get that one so fast.
No, I had a feeling that one was going to show up, and there's not that many lyrics to Freebird.
Okay. All right. You did
for
an inventory.
For a 9-minute long song, it's got like 8 lyrics.
Yeah. You did an inventory of all the free songs in your head first. All right. You're 2 for 2.
Okay.
Lyric 3. I wear tight clothing, high-heeled shoes. It doesn't mean that I'm a prostitute.
I don't think I've ever heard this lyric.
Whoa.
I wear clothing, high-heeled shoes, don't mean I'm a prostitute. I don't even have a guess. I'm going to assume that this is...
Does that help at all?
Now I've got Mr. Sandman stuck in
my head. No, it's not Mr. Sandman, but they do a part that's like Mr. Sandman in the song.
I really don't. I have a feeling this is like a pop artist that like missed my radar. What is it?
That is Free Your Mind by En Vogue.
Oh, yep. Okay.
I wear tight clothing, high-heeled shoes. It doesn't mean that I'm a prostitute.
I feel like obviously I know the song Free Your Mind by En Vogue, but I think I literally just know the Free Your Mind. And like nothing else.
It's from one of the verses, Matt.
Maybe okay, I assumed that it wasn't the chorus. I assumed it wasn't free your mind, I'm no prostitute.
Nope. Free your mind, and the rest will follow. Okay, you're 2 for 3. Lyric 4.
I got 2. Oh, yeah, we're on 4 now.
I've fallen in love for the first time. And this time I know it's for real. I've fallen in love. Yeah.
I don't know this one either. I'm like, I have like my list of like songs with the word free, like sitting in here. I'm going to make a random guess because it's a beloved hit song by this artist, but I genuinely don't think I know most of the lyrics to it. Is any chance is this Freedom by George Michael?
It is not.
Okay, what is it?
It's actually I Want to Break Free by Queen.
Ah, not my favorite Queen song. Not one of my go-tos. All right, well, I've already failed at my 5 out of 6, but...
Yeah, you got 2 left.
Yeah, I got 2 left. Let's see if I can get 4 out of 6.
Lyric 5. You better get this one. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself.
Oh, that's obviously Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen by Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, I gave you
one of my
gimme.
Favorite songs of all time. I bet that there are people so angry how quickly I got that while struggling with Free Fallin' and not getting Free Your Mind or I Want to Break Free.
Yeah. And the last one. Okay, so you got 3. Looking into your eyes, I know I'm right. If anything's worth my love, it's worth a fight. We only get one chance and nothing ties our hands. You're what I want. Listen to me. Nothing I want's out of my reach.
Shit. Can you read that again? Because I had the melody and then I lost it.
Looking into your eyes, I know I'm right. If anything's worth my love, it's worth a fight. We only get one chance and nothing ties our hands. You're what I want.
Okay. I'm Free by Kenny Loggins.
Nice!
Once you said the one lyric, I actually had to take my headphones off and sing that lyric before you read more and screwed me up.
You did pretty good, man. I got to give you credit. I thought that last one was a hard one, and you
but
got that
you
one.
Have no clue how much I love the song I'm Free by Kenny Loggins. Okay. I would have been pissed if I got that wrong, honestly.
All right.
I think that's been in my top 20 Spotify rap as long as I've used Spotify.
Wow. A lot of good Free songs out there.
Yeah, there some of the ones. Do you want to know what the ones were that I had like on back catalog?
I guess Freedom. I didn't even think of Freedom, George Michael.
Yeah, so Freedom was one that was sitting in my my brain. Actually, I didn't think you were going to do Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen. So that was one that was like sitting in the frontal lobe of my brain. I didn't know if you were willing to do Get Free by the Vines. That was one that was sitting in my head for a little bit. Yeah, I think those were the main ones that I was thinking of. That was a fun game. I liked that game.
Yeah, we did all right. All right, Thunder or Blunder, Bodines, go.
I think they are a good band. I think that they are clearly beloved to a lot of people, and I didn't dislike anything that I heard by them, but I also did not clock or remember almost any other song that I listened to them. I do think that I would, if I was walking around CD Warehouse and I saw a Bodine CD, I would probably grab it.
Mm-hmm. What's the most you'd pay for it?
If it was the one with Closer to Free, I would maybe pay up to five. Anything
Whoa,
else?
Oh, five for a CD? Yeah.
Anything else, $3 or less. I think this is probably the toughest one for me because I have equal amount of reasons to go Blunder as I do to go Thunder on this. But I guess who am I to give Blunder to a band that is literally a permanent fixture in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Yeah, I'm gonna go with a very light thunderstorm on this one.
Okay. I would say I like Closer to Free, but it does sound like a TV theme song. Like even if it wasn't a TV theme song, it sounds like one. I listened to a lot of their back catalog last night. I started studying for this one. I had my earbuds in. I'm listening to every album. I'm going through every album and listening. And kind of like you said, Matt, nothing that I would add. I was expecting I was going to add something to a playlist. Like, ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Didn't really do that. Closer to Free would be the closest thing. I don't know, just something kind of middle of the road and not exciting about their music to me.
I think that we named a bunch of jangle pop bands that we think were inspired by the Bodines. And I'd be willing to say I think that they also elevated the Bodine sound in each case. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that it's impossible to believe that the Jim Blossoms and Counting Crows are inspired by this band, but I also think they took what the Bodines did and did it way better.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe the Bodines inspired a lot of great music that we like, even if the source material isn't our thing. This band started in, sounds like, when I was born or before then, and is still a band. Once again, I'll say it, prolific, put out so many albums, even through a terrible thing that happened that, you know, Kurt continues on. Far be it from me to give the Bodines anything but Thunder. So this is a certified Thunder from us, Matt.
All right.
No, I can't take another tell. Remember when I think I know this one, but then you tell me again. You're blowing up the details that ain't how it happened. From newer beginnings, we'd agree on the ends. All this time I spent.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Ophalios of the band Punchline and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Another Tale of Remember When off the Punchline album Lion. Visit punchlionmusic.com for any upcoming news on the band. Our podcast is on Patreon now. Find us at patreon.com/OHTpodcast for early access to episodes, bonus conversations, and a chance to vote on future songs for us to cover. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on any podcasting app, and tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder. I'm starting to see that it's a complete other thing. What happened to us brain? We used to be a team. I told myself I wouldn't ever do this again, but hey, I got this outlet, so I'm plugging it in. I want to feel the heat flowing from deep within me and go out to the forest, scream at the trees. I need to disconnect.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.